households coming together, not knowing who may have the virus, just scares me. Even if they say social distance or a mask, I'm not convinced fully. I understand, Chewy. Those are my concerns as well. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a bit slower and we use words and phrases with English learners in mind. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. Pete Musto will bring us an education story about college interns facing changes because of the coronavirus. I will return for words in their stories. Then John Russell will update us on the testing of COVID-19 vaccines. We will end the program with our American Presidents series. Today, Kelly Jean Kelly will tell us about the President, Franklin Pierce. But first, here's Pete Musto.
If everything had gone as planned, Mina Lee would be in Guatemala right now. The 20-year-old American told VOA the Guatemala trip was part of a program at Princeton University in New Jersey. She began studying history at Princeton in 2018. But Lee says the coronavirus health crisis completely changed her plans for the rest of this year. Luckily, she already had a part-time job with the technology company Grubber, and the company offered a solution to her problem, a summer internship. Internships have become increasingly common in the United States and elsewhere in recent years. They provide important work experience to college students. Internships also give students a chance to see what working at a given company is like before they launch their careers. A growing number of companies have come to expect college students to complete at least one internship if they want to be considered for full-time employment. Yet the coronavirus has affected the ability of students everywhere to take part in such programs. Studies have shown that half of all internship openings in the U.S. have been cut since the coronavirus started spreading. In Britain, 64% of the positions have been cut. Hundreds of companies, including Airbnb, FedEx, Gap, and Disney, have canceled their summer internship programs, one online database reported. The International Labor Organization noted last month that at least one in every six young workers worldwide has stopped working. The United Nations Labor Agency says the long-term effects of the health crisis could lead to a lockdown generation scarred throughout their working lives. That is why some companies are moving their internships completely online. Amazon is seeking more than 8,000 interns for its summer program. And while many of her friends now have nothing to do, Mina Lee has been able to work for Grubber entirely from her New York home. Even if there was a feeling that something was stolen, it's followed by a feeling of excitement for what's going to come next, Lee said. Yet some observers worry that an online internship may not be as useful to young people as an in-person experience. And they share concerns about what will happen to students without any internship at all. Edwin Koch, is Director of Research, Public Policy, and Legislative Affairs at the National Association of Colleges and Employers. He notes that 22% of the companies his group works with have canceled summer internships. This is troubling for several reasons, he says. It is not just that students might miss out on valuable work experience or a chance to learn new skills. Since the recession of 2008, companies have grown to depend on internships to identify the best candidates for employment. And they also give students a chance to see if the culture of a given company is a good fit for them. It really requires the student to kind of network and integrate with the workflow of the organization, get a feel for the organization, the type of people that individual will work with, the comfort level they find working in that kind of environment, Koch said. David Yeager adds that what is happening now is also closely tied to these young people's future. Yeager is a professor of economics at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. He notes that job candidates are more likely to hear back from employers if they have had an internship. But also, companies increasingly expect students to have more than one internship during their college years. And students are more likely to get a second internship if they already had one. So it takes an internship to get an internship. And the kids who are in their second or third year of university who aren't going to have an internship, perhaps their first internship this summer, really could be behind the eight ball going forward, Yeager said. However, there are some people who say the future is not all bad for college students facing an unusual summer. Rebecca Wolf is the Human Resources and Information Director of USA Academic Internship Experts. Every year, her group places about 2,000 students from U.S. colleges and universities in academic internships in Europe. All of USA's summer programs have been canceled. And since the programs involve the students living and working in a foreign culture, it seems unlikely they will be able to move the programs completely online. But that does not mean there are no valuable life experiences students can take away from this difficult time, Wolf says. And since the coronavirus crisis is affecting people around the world, these students will not necessarily be treated unfairly. If everybody's experiencing the same barriers right now, nobody's falling behind, she said. I'm Pete Musto.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On today's program, we will talk about the expression, a rolling stone gathers no moss. Most of you probably know that a stone is the same thing as a rock. But what about moss? Well, moss is a very soft green plant. It has very small leaves and does not flower. It loves shade and water, so moss grows well on wet ground, trees, and rocks. In fact, rocks and stones that line shady creeks and rivers are often mossy. Moss grows slowly and is a rootless plant. It spreads well over non-moving surfaces. In fact, to prevent moss from growing on stones in your garden, you can just move the rocks around, turning them over now and then. Why? Because a rolling stone gathers no moss. Now, years ago, this expression was covered in Another Words and Their Stories. That story explained the expression's connection to rock and roll. Writer Shelley Gullist explained that a rolling stone gathers no moss can be understood in a couple of ways. It can mean that a person who never settles down in one place will not gather wealth or long-lasting relationships. The moss that slowly spreads across the rock represents the money and friends we make over time. How does it feel to be on your own with no direction home? A complete unknown, like a rolling stone. But there is another way we use this expression. Think about a rolling stone. It leads a carefree existence, on the move with no moss to worry about. People who are rolling stones live without the restrictions that come with responsibilities. They go where they choose, when they choose. And they don't stay anywhere long enough to form attachments or moss. A free spirit is also a term we use to describe such a person. They are not tied down with lots of traditional responsibilities. A rolling stone could also be described as nomadic, often moving. Experts at the Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary define a nomad as a member of a group of people who move from place to place. Often nomads move around to find food. However, these days we can use the word nomadic to describe anyone who moves around a lot. Now, the Rolling Stone lifestyle has been explored in many songs, including work by Muddy Waters and Bob Dylan. One of the best came from The Temptations in 1972. Papa Was a Rolling Stone is about a man who leaves his family. In the song, the mother tries to explain the father her son never knew. And that's the end of this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo. Researchers are currently hard at work developing a COVID-19 vaccine. Here is John Russell with an update on that work.
The next few months will be an important time for researchers who are developing vaccines to protect against the novel coronavirus. But health experts warn that people should not get their hopes up too high for such a vaccine anytime soon. About 15 COVID-19 vaccine studies are taking place worldwide. Vaccines train the body to recognize and fight off invading germs. Yet scientists do not know just how strong of an immune response is needed to protect people. Nor do they know the best way to develop a vaccine against the virus. Currently, only China is developing inactivated vaccines, ones made by growing the new coronavirus and killing it. Inactivated vaccines, considered to be somewhat old-fashioned, are dependable but require high-security laboratories to produce. Polio shots and some influenza vaccines are made in this way. Most other possible vaccines target not the whole germ, but a major piece of it, the spike protein. This protein is on the surface of the coronavirus and helps it invade human cells. Researchers at Britain's University of Oxford have another idea. They have genetically engineered a chimpanzee cold virus so that it will not spread. But the genetically engineered virus can carry the gene for the spike protein into just enough cells to trick the human immune system into thinking that an infection is coming. In the United States, biotechnology company Moderna and the National Institutes of Health are working on a vaccine that carries a piece of the coronavirus genetic code. This information tells the body to produce harmless spike copies that the immune system learns to recognize. Dr. Anthony Fauci heads the U.S. National Institutes of Health, or NIH. He told the Associated Press that researchers must test thousands of people not where infection rates are rising, but where the virus is found at low levels. The reason is that scientists need to be able to study the health of vaccine volunteers several weeks after the virus starts spreading through their community. Because there are too few new infections locally to get clear answers, some researchers are testing vaccines in other countries. For example, British and Chinese researchers are testing possible vaccines in Brazil and the United Arab Emirates. The United States is set to open the largest vaccine trials in July, about 30,000 individuals. Those men and women likely will be divided among U.S. citizens and volunteers in other countries, such as Brazil or South Africa, Fauci said. While he is hopeful, the NIH chief remains cautious. "We've been burned before," he said. About a month after the U.S. trial begins, British researchers will launch tests that are expected to involve another 30,000 people. Animal research suggests COVID-19 vaccines could prevent serious disease, but may not completely block infection. One study showed vaccinated animals avoided being infected with pneumonia, but had some virus left in their noses and throats. Whether it was enough to spread to the unvaccinated is not known. Yet anything to avoid or even reduce symptoms would be a big win. "My expectations have always been that we'll get rid of symptomatic disease. From what we've seen of the vaccines so far, that's what they do," said Drew Weissman, a doctor at the University of Pennsylvania. "The first vaccines might be replaced with later, better replacements, as historically happens in medicine," noted David Ridley, a health economist with Duke University in North Carolina. "And while injections in the arm are the fastest to make, those for respiratory diseases require virus-fighting antibodies to make their way into the lungs." Oxford lead researcher Sarah Gilbert said her team will eventually explore delivery of a vaccine through the nose. "Many vaccine successes around the world are needed. This isn't a race of who gets there first. This is get as many approved, safe, and effective vaccines as you possibly can," Fauci said. Vaccine experts say it is time to set public expectations. Many scientists do not expect a coronavirus vaccine to be nearly as protective as the measles shot. But if the best COVID-19 vaccine is only 50% effective, that's still, to me, a great vaccine, said the University of Pennsylvania's Weissman. "We need to start having this conversation now," he added, "so people will not be surprised." I'm John Russell.
To finish our show for you today, we continue our series of programs about America's presidents. Today, Kelly Jean Kelly will report on the presidency of Franklin Pierce.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Franklin Pierce, the 14th President of the United States. He took office in 1853 at age 48. At that time, he was the youngest person elected to the White House. Pierce was known for being social and for his good looks. But his personal life was full of tragedy, and he was not an effective chief executive. Over time, he has come to be remembered as one of the country's worst presidents. Franklin Pierce was born in the northern state of New Hampshire. He was one of eight children. He attended school regularly as a child, and he went on to Bowdoin College in Maine. There, he developed his skills as an excellent public speaker. He also became an able lawyer. Pierce's abilities carried him far, but his personal connections helped too. His father became the governor of New Hampshire. Shortly after, Pierce was elected to the state legislature. He soon became a member of the U.S. Congress, first as a member of the House of Representatives, and then as a senator. Several important things happened in Pierce's personal life during those years in Washington, D.C. He married Jane Means Appleton. They soon had a son, but the child died after only 3 days. The couple went on to have two more boys. In Washington, Franklin Pierce also developed friendships with many people from the South. They defended the right of states to permit slavery. Although he was from the North, Pierce came to share the opinions of his Southern friends. He grew to dislike anti-slavery activists, who were known as abolitionists. As a politician, Pierce was a member of the Democratic Party and strongly supported the ideas of President Andrew Jackson. But politics did not appeal to his wife. She also did not like her husband's habit of drinking alcohol with his friends. Jane Pierce belonged to the temperance movement, which urged Americans to avoid the use of alcoholic drinks. So Pierce resigned his job in the Senate and moved back to New Hampshire. There, he stopped drinking alcohol and earned fame as a lawyer and public speaker. But tragedy struck again. His second son became sick and died. Pierce remained active in politics in New Hampshire. He helped the Democratic candidate for president at the time, James K. Polk, win votes in the state. When Polk entered the White House, he gave Pierce a position as a general in the Mexican-American War. Pierce did not earn the respect of his troops. In one battle, he passed out after he fell off his horse and crushed his leg. Some of his men, seeing what happened, fled the battlefield. Others called him Fainting Frank. Although Pierce had his critics, he returned to New Hampshire as a leader in the state's Democratic Party. Yet no one expected him to become President of the United States. Pierce's nomination came during the Democratic National Convention in 1852. party leaders could not agree on a candidate. They were split among the three top choices. So the party turned to Pierce. They liked the fact that he was not well known or had taken any strong positions as a lawmaker. As a result, fewer people could object to him, they reasoned. Pierce did very little during the election campaign. He did not need to. Many voters, especially in the South, did not like his opponent. When the election was held, Pierce won easily. But before he took office, another terrible thing happened. Franklin and Jane Pierce were traveling by train with their youngest son, Benjamin, who was 11 years old. The train went off the rails. Benny was killed instantly in front of his parents. Neither Franklin nor Jane Pierce ever really recovered. Jane believed their son's death was a punishment from God for her husband becoming president. As president, Pierce faced an extremely difficult situation. The country's ongoing dispute about whether and where to permit slavery was becoming more intense. Under Pierce, the dispute centered on the areas of Kansas and Nebraska. At the time, both areas were considered territories, not states. And each territory was above the line of the Missouri Compromise of 1820. That act, approved by lawmakers nearly 35 years before Pierce took office, banned slavery in northern areas, including what would become Kansas and Nebraska. But pro-slavery settlers demanded that Kansas and Nebraska voters, a group comprised of white men, decide the issue for themselves. A majority of U.S. lawmakers agreed. Under pressure, President Pierce signed the Kansas-Nebraska Act in 1854. The measure was one of the most important in U.S. history. It overturned the Missouri Compromise and canceled the ban on slavery. It incited years of intense violence between pro-slavery and anti-slavery activists, and it pushed a divided nation even further apart. The Troubles also showed Pierce to be an ineffective president. He could not ease the tensions over slavery, nor unite the country behind the Kansas-Nebraska Act. And he delayed using his power to stop the violence in Kansas until it was far too late. Finally, his sympathy for pro-slavery groups angered many in the North, including people in his own party. The Democrats did not nominate him again at the next election. After 4 years as president, Pierce returned to New Hampshire. He rarely socialized and began drinking alcohol again. After his wife died in 1863, Pierce seemed to disappear from public life. Americans heard little about him until his death in 1869. But he lived to see the ultimate tragedy of the Civil War, that he, like other presidents before him, had failed to prevent. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories.